Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to All Stats Aren't We, a podcast in which Leeds fans cast their combined eye at the goings-on at Elland Road, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Leeds United. I'm Adam Elliott and I'm joined today by Martin Riley. Martin, how are you doing and what did you eat for tea?
I'm very full, to be honest. I made a bit of a pig of myself with my tea. We had some chicken burgers and so I ended up having two full chicken burgers in bread buns. And we had no chips available to quickly make, so I put in some crispy pancakes to have on the side. And the missus wasn't quite wanting many of them, so she only had one, and I put four in. So I had like three crispy pancakes as well as two burgers, so I'm just absolutely stuffed. But it was really nice and really good tasty. It had some nice chipotle sauce on it, and it was really tasty. What about you?
That sounds really good, to be fair. I myself had a bit of a Martin classic. You have three or four that you've definitely had multiple times this season. One of them was chicken Kievs, so I had that this evening with some
nice
chips. Just needed something quick before we did talk about Hull, which is exactly what we're doing today. Hull City. Did I say that right, Hosty? I hope so. He's not here. It's Martin and I yet again. We don't, unfortunately, have an opposition interview today. So you just have to settle for the posh Horsforth boy and the hairy beast tonight. But yes, Martin, we shall talk about Hull City, who are one of the few teams this season, as we were just discussing before the podcast, who have stuck with their manager all year. So a bit easier to talk about because they've got a lot of games under Liam Rossini and have for quite some time now since he took over from Arveladze from that last season. Can you talk to me a little bit about anything else that has changed, though, over the course of the season, if anything?
So, yeah, Hull have been doing well, quite well recently. So we won't go into what the results have been yet till the next question, but they had quite a bit of a shaky Christmas time and they've had a lot of losses between like the 22nd of December and the like 12th of January. They had 4 losses in amongst there to Bristol, Sunderland, Sheffield Wednesday and Norwich. So they were really struggling around that time and looks like the Hull board kept faith in Rossini and that faith has been repaired because then after that they've really gone. I don't think anything really has changed with them tactically. They've been pretty similar with the same sort of things that they usually do, but they did have a very successful January transfer window and brought in a lot of quality players. They definitely had the best window of the Championship by far. They brought in a lot of good quality players, the likes of John Michael Seri, Zaruri, and Valio. Who am I missing? Am I missing anyone else?
Let me think. There's definitely one. Ryan Giles at left back, he definitely came in on loan.
Yeah, Ryan Giles as well, yeah.
Pinched from us, I think. There was quite a lot of reports linking him to us, but we didn't want to do the option to buy, so Hull got him instead because they were willing to do that. The obligation, I think, is if they go up, so they're going to have to pay that. I think that was it. But yeah, they did have an absolutely excellent January window. I'm going to say this quite early and it's quite punchy. I think outside of the three relegated teams, just player for player, purely nothing else, just player for player, not tactics or anything else, I think Hull have the most quality in the Championship. And that is actually reflected somewhat if you look at Transfermarkt, which is a website that I'm sure lots of our fans know and we've discussed many times on this podcast. They have the fourth highest market value in the division after the three relegated teams. We're second just behind Leicester by a couple of million only. But yeah, it is Hull out of all the other championship teams that have the most, which is not surprising given the quality of the loan players that they've signed. And some of them are genuinely 15, 20 million pound footballers that are playing championship football and absolutely shouldn't be. But they have good connections. Rossignol himself and their owner, Ilicali, I can't remember how you pronounce it. He's got good connections to both Turkey and some Premier League sides, seemingly, as well. So that's part of why they have, looked like a really strong side for a while now. And it's not altogether surprising, I guess, that they've improved since those signings were made in January, now that they've bedded in somewhat. But every team has had, well, not every team, but a couple of important teams have had difficult festive periods, us being one, them being another, and now they've come out the other side of it looking a little bit stronger. And I do think this is one of our tougher games, you'd have to agree, wouldn't you? And I would also just ask, can you give me a little bit more of a lowdown on some of their recent results then?
So, yeah, the last 10 games, they've done really well. They've got five wins out of those games and four draws and only one loss. So that's a pretty strong recent results. And they've had some tough games in amongst those as well. But they've had a game against Leicester, games against West Brom, Southampton, Sunderland. So these are all pretty tough games. They've also had a game against Swansea, who have obviously got a new good manager in place and did well to get a win there. So yeah, the recent results have been quite strong. There have been some games where maybe they've got a little bit fortunate. Just looking over some of the XG numbers, like in particular the win against Sunderland, they only picked up 0.1 XG in that whole match and somehow won. They only won 1-0. So the games like that and other games like against Leicester, they got a 2-2 draw in that game and Leicester put up nearly double the XG which they had. So there's some good fortune in there, but there's also a lot of quality in their side. So these individuals can sometimes make the difference in these fairs and make low XG chances more than what they are. So the individuals that play here definitely makes a difference. And I think that's what's been the biggest thing for them, is that those individuals, rather than anything new that they're doing tactically.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely concur with that. I definitely agree with that. We'll probably talk a little bit more about individuals later, but that's a really, really good assessment in my opinion. And also, I just wanted to quickly talk about their form in the games against the other sides around us, so the top four, if you like, the four teams that have pulled away quite heavily this season. And their record so far against those sides is that they have 4 points against Leicester. They have none against Ipswich, but they still have a game to play. They did lose the first game. They have one against us already, and yet we still have to play them. By the way, bear in mind, we have beaten every single team we've played this season over two games, apart from West Brom, at least once. So West Brom are the only team that have shut us out completely, not been able to get a win against. And then Hull's other games against Southampton, they won 1-2-1 at St Mary's, and they lost the other one 2-1 at home. But this is the side now, as it is, that have got the draw against Leicester and the win against Southampton recently. And that's where I'm a little bit more concerned, because they do really have that quality on the counter and in transition. And I think that's something to maybe be wary of for this game in terms of how they have performed against those sides. But anyway, I'm sort of diving in a little bit into in possession stuff there. So do you want to quickly talk to me a little bit about how they actually set up in possession this season under Liam Rossignol?
So, yeah, I can do. So the basic tactical structures have used a lot of the 4-2-3-1 shape, but they have also at times gone with a 4-4-2. But I think 4-2-3-1 is probably the most likely formation that they will be looking to set up in. They've got two wing-backs who do like to get forward on both sides of the pitch in Louis Coyle and Ryan Giles, both who are very capable of putting the deliveries into the box, especially Giles. His crosses have been very good for them and definitely open in their arsenal. And Louis Coyle is very good at driving forward with the ball. It's just, obviously, it's player Leeds fans may remember.
You should do,
So, yeah, so he's been doing well for them. And they've got a quality of midfield pair with Jean-Michel Seri, who is a player who I've liked for a long time, formerly of Fulham. People should remember him from, and he's just a very, very quality player. He's knocking on a bit now. He's 32, so he's not quite as fast as he once was, but I don't think his game was ever really about weight anyway. He's just a very good controller of the midfield, very press resistant, and he still retained those qualities into the age that he is now. just think of Adam Forshaw, and that's the kind of midfielder that you're looking at for Tom Michael Seri. Then going forward, they've got a lot of quality individuals who I think you find in the final third, their wingers like to tuck in more, and the wing backs provide more of the whip. So you get a lot of combination play going with the wing backs getting forward and the wingers. And they've got quality in those sort of areas. They've got forward like Liam Delap, who I think isn't going to be available for this game, so that's very good for us. But we've also got the players like Valio and Saruri. Saruri last year in the Championship was tore it up with Burnley. So they've got so much quality in that final third. And they have a number of different ways to attack in possession. They're both equally effective at keeping hold of the ball and camping in the opposition half and trying to force breaks that way. But they're also very dangerous in transition. They can get the ball forward really quickly when they need to. And they've got players who can carry it as well from deeper areas on both sides of the fullback areas. But they're both capable of doing driving runs both outside and inside. So yeah, they've got a lot of different ways that can hurt sides, and capable of holding possession well against good sides. In the game against Leicester, they ended that game with 51% possession, so pretty even possession share against the other best team in the league besides us. So they're definitely a team that we have to take seriously when they've got the ball, and we'll have to be at the best of our game to stop them penetrating our box.
Yep, and Rosinha last season, and I guess this is kind of talking about how they've evolved over time. He came in at a time when the team was struggling quite a lot, and I think at first he really, really focused on out of possession stuff, making them really defensively strong and sound and keeping themselves compact. And then this season and this year, it's been more about how they evolve into more of an in-possession team and what they can do. They have struggled at times to break down some sort of poor opposition that will sit in against them. So the Birmingham 1-0 draw was one that they were particularly frustrated with. I remember earlier in the season seeing quite a lot of Hull fans frustrated at that one. But they have got better in that regard. It's not that surprising when you look at the playing squad that they have at their disposal now. I think that players like Seri, as you mentioned, a really good player on the half turn, really press resistant, and has good sort of range of pass, is going to be really useful in terms of evolving into that sort of team. And I would imagine that next season, even though quite a lot of their good players are on loan this season and they might have to rebuild slightly, that they'd probably be similar again, where they look to be a sort of top six team if they don't get promoted this season, and look to be even stronger in possession. But as you mentioned, it is more about those long balls or through balls into sort of channels and wingers who will come kind of narrow into the half spaces and let the fullbacks hold the width and attack. And yeah, that is something that's been a real function of their game, even in the first half of the season, but has certainly come to the fore more in the second half of the season now that they have such quality individuals. And yeah, this is why I think they're a dangerous proposition for us, one of our hardest remaining games, it has to be said, because they can make things stodgy and compact at the back if they want to, and then spring out of that pretty quickly because they've got good ball playing defenders and midfielders that will get the ball out to some really, really fast dynamic attackers. So yeah, I'm probably a little bit more scared of them than you are from our conversations, but they are definitely a good team in possession, have struggled against some of the weaker teams, like I say, but this is we're not a weaker team, are we? So which is why we might struggle a little bit against them. But let's move on to sort of out of possession stuff now. I wouldn't say necessarily for me that it's suffered drastically this season because they've tried to improve on their in possession stuff, but it has certainly not been quite as together, I guess, in some of the games, especially again against weaker opposition. They sometimes do leave some big spaces, and it's something you definitely picked up on. I wondered if you just wanted to discuss that a little bit further.
So things I noticed about them out of possession in the game I watched, which was against Sunderland, that was the most recent game I could actually find to watch footage from. But in that game, they were quite aggressive in their high press. So in that game, they were set up in a 4-4-2. So they had two forwards in there. I think it was Valier who was playing as a forward in this game, alongside, I can't remember the other guy's name. But either way, so you had the two forwards, and you would get the wingers putting pressure on as well, and you would occasionally get some of these central midfielders as well pushing forward. So you sometimes had six players in the opposition half who were putting pressure on, trying to block passing lanes, things on those lines. But I did notice that at least in this game, it wasn't the best, really, and Sunderland definitely did find ways around it. And one of the biggest things I noticed was there's a bit of a disconnect between the forward press and the back line. So obviously, most times when you have a high press, that's also joined with a high back line, because otherwise you leave a big gap in between the back line and the midfield. But in this game, quite a few times, I would notice players like Alex Pritchard dropping in space, being in that role, and Sunderland were able to find passes out through the high press or along the ground, not even like just hoofing it forward. Just nice, incisive balls through the high press and finding Pritchard in space, and he was able to drive forward with ease. And then they get the ball to players like Jack Clark, who obviously we all know Jack Clark, and you especially love him loads. So they were able to find him in space. And we also have dynamic attackers like Jack Clark. So we should be able to find those spaces quite well, in my opinion. So I was more impressed with them in possession than I was out of possession. But they're definitely not a poor side out of possession. They do well in deeper areas at defending the box. They've got defenders who are capable of doing that. Louis Coyle especially is a good 1v1 defender. But however, he does get forward quite often, and he doesn't have the best in recovery pace. So when he does get forward, then there is a lot of space to attack behind that. So there's a lot of things that we can look at and think that we can do well against in their out of possession game, and how they especially defend when defending in transition. That can be where they struggle the most, in my opinion.
I think what you were kind of alluding to is, I think they're trying to have some kind of a hybrid press where they do press quite aggressively from the front, try and force teams into mistakes. They've definitely had some joy against Southampton doing that when Southampton, they've been particularly good at it when teams have tried to build the ball short and create turnovers and force them into individual areas, and they've been really good against that, against the good sides at doing that. But it, like you say, it does leave gaps, and that's because of the sort of deepness of their back line at times, and the big space there is that basically is going to give quite a lot of our players, as you mentioned, a lot of space to work with. But at the same time, I do think they're trying to just perfect more of a hybrid press, because as I've said, like against some of the better teams, they definitely drop deep into a more compact shape in the defensive phase to kind of stodge things up, and they are quite good at that. I think Jacob Greaves is a really good box defender, for example, one of the best centre-backs in the league outside of the obvious at the top end. So they're a funny team in that regard. But yeah, I think it's about the right moments of knowing when to press and set traps, and they have, like I say, been quite good against the good teams, which is why I'm a little bit concerned. But if they get it wrong, hopefully, like you say, there are spaces for players like Somerville to drop in and really start driving the ball forwards, or even midfielders to get free. And Ampadu might well play in this game as a midfielder, yet we're not 100% sure. We'll come on to that section of the pod a bit later on. And some of our listeners might not be quite aware of when we're recording this, but it's a slightly weird time. I'll reveal that later. But yes, I agree with everything you said. It's just that, like I say, they have lost a bit of defensive stability this season, even though they can keep things compact against some of the better teams. So I'm hoping that there's some spaces left open in the sort of middle areas of the pitch for us to really exploit. But we shall move on now. I wanted to ask you your opinion on this. I think I'm expecting them to sit a little bit deeper and try and transition us more, especially with us being at Elland Road and probably trying to pin them. And because they are capable of doing it and springing out of that quickly, are you expecting them to sit a little bit more of a deeper mid block rather than be as aggressive in the high press? Or do you still think they'll trust some of their forward players to do that press? I guess what I'm asking partly is that they have a lot of pace up front, so maybe they will trust some of their players to cover that distance if they don't quite go and make that block or block that passing lane or whatever and intercept the ball. So yeah, I just wondered what your thoughts are on that and whether you think they might sit a bit deeper than we've first sort of spoken about.
So yeah, I'm not sure about the way they're going to approach this game, but if they do decide to go with the sort of press which was shown against Sunderland, then I think that could be a bit dangerous of them, and it would definitely leave a lot of space behind which we could exploit. So I could maybe see them sitting back a little bit more than that, maybe not a full low block, but something like an aggressive mid block would be what I'd think they'll go for. So something which will try to force into mistakes around the halfway line, putting pressure on midfield with receiving from deep, and also attacking players dropping deep to try to keep an eye on those players coming deeper as well. So there's a few ways that they could look to do it. But if I was Liam Lowe Senior, I think I would probably see strength we have, especially at home, and we should be able to play through at full high press if they do decide to do that. So I probably would expect to see more of a mid block, aggressive mid block, put it that way.
Lovely stuff. Right, let's talk about some sort of players a little bit more now. I think there's quite a lot to go at here. We've already mentioned a few that we like, but I think there's a little bit more detail to be had about who's good and who's bad. So should we start off with the bad? Because I think there's a lot less of that. Who are the players in their team that you've watched that you thought, yeah, there's definitely a weakness there in their game or something that we can potentially exploit?
Well, the one that I've already mentioned is Louis Coyle. Although he is a very good player getting forward, and individually he's good at defending against attacking dribblers, he does lack a fair bit when it comes to pace, especially. And I think similar can be said of their centre-backs as well. It probably won't be too much of an issue for the centre-backs because they should drop deep enough with enough time to be able to defend well. But especially in the full-back areas, with them committing the bodies far forward at times on both sides of the pitch, because sometimes it can be both full-backs who do get forward. So their rest defence isn't the best. So maybe the weakness isn't as much with individuals, but more the tactics which they're in. So quite a similar thing to what we had under Jesse Marsh, because we had players like Pascal Strauch who are good individual defenders, and because of the system, it was exposing them more than what they need to be. So I think this could be a similar case with this. You'd have a lot of space which defenders are trying to ask to defend, and not having the recovery pace to defend them is an issue in systems like this where they do commit bodies forward. But I would maybe think they may recognise that as being a weakness, and they maybe not commit both sides of the fullbacks forward at one point. So they may look to maybe give Louis Coyle a job of getting forward on the right side, and to potentially having Ryan Giles sit back when he does get forward, and then vice versa. So it's more of a Pontatina type movement. So one side gets forward, the other side stays back. Just sort of got that extra protection in the rest of him. So that would be what I would do if I was in Rossini's shoes, rather than leaving both sides open to transitional attacks. That's what I'd say on that one. And other than that, there's not really too much to say. As far as weaknesses goes, their forward line is very good. There's players on there who are on par with our attackers. Players like Phil Jean and Drury and Falio, they're on par with our attackers. Obviously, I rate Routier higher than all of them. But me and my love for Routier.
And Somerville.
And Somerville, of course, yeah. We can't forget Somerville. And Nonto, and also Dan James. We've got plenty of attackers who are very good, and so do they. So their attacking line isn't something which is a weakness at all. I think in terms of the midfield, I'd say obviously Michael Seri is very good. Possibly there could be a bit of weakness there when it comes to out of possession. That he's not quite as intense as what he once was. So there's definitely a bit of a mismatch when it comes to pace in that sort of area. And also his midfield partner, it's similar in that sort of respect. Slater, I believe they've been using a lot. He is a good player on the ball, but I'm not sure what he's like really backwards defending, and if players were running at him, how well he'd cope with that. I've not watched enough of them to really say for sure, because I was only able to watch one game. I'm not sure if you have any more thoughts on Slater than that.
Not really. I actually prefer, from what I have seen of their midfielder, their deeper midfield players, I prefer Tyler Morton, and he had an excellent game in the first under-21s game of this international break we just had recently. I watched that. It was against Azerbaijan, but he was brilliant, and I'm not sure how much of a part he'll play from a starting point of view because of his recent sort of... He's played a lot of football, basically, in the international break, but I actually think he's a better player than Slater from what I've seen, but I don't really... Yeah, I know a little bit about Slater, but not as much as other players.
Oh, that's fair. So, whoever it is who's playing, if it is going to be Morton rather than Slater, is Morton good with the sort of backwards defending kind of thing? Does he have pace to his game?
He's definitely not too slow and immobile. He's not in that regard like too bad. I've been more impressed with what he does in possession. He just looks like a really nice technical passer of the ball again. So another one like that they've got in their team.
Yeah, that's fair. That's sort of midfield is maybe the one which I think we should do well with in that sort of area. I think our midfielders should be able to do a good job physically against both of those players. Especially Cameron, who's been very good individually at winning his duels and getting second balls won and imposing himself on game, so I think that we should be able to handle that part of it. And I don't see anything which Ilya Groove can cope with either. So I think that area of the pitch is probably less strong than the forward line, at least out of possession. Possession is good still, of course. So yeah, I think I've probably lost a couple of players maybe you can talk about there, so maybe you could talk about the ones I didn't.
Yeah, I've got plenty to go out myself here. I think you touched on something I was going to say, which is I think it would be really stupid of Rossini to play with the two fullbacks as aggressively bombing forward as they have in some games this season. I think they might have to create a situational back three at times. And if that is the case, I think they're more likely to go a bit more left side heavy in terms of how they attack. Main reason being Giles loves to get forward, has a really, really nice left foot, just a lovely left peg, to be honest. From open play and set pieces, he's excellent. And he will happily overlap whoever's playing on the left, which has been Zaruri, who can cut inside because he's very two-footed. Zaruri happily will cut inside and do damage from there. So, yeah, I think that's more likely. And I think Coyle is going to have to be more wary in terms of rest defence. For players like Somerville, he is actually a decent, he's a diligent defender, I would say, Coyle, as you kind of touched on. But he definitely lacks athleticism and is probably the weakest link in this team. He's a pretty consistent performer for Hull, but he's definitely one of the most like upgradable players. But then he's also there for some intangible stuff as well. He's the club captain and he does speak really well in interviews and things like that. If you've ever watched them after on Sky and stuff. A few other areas, they're not quite as strong. And you've kind of mentioned one of them as being the athleticism and mobility and intensity, I guess, of the pivot players, maybe not the best. Allsop in goal is a little bit of a stinky goalkeeper, I would say. He's not the best. Definitely an area they could upgrade on. I think they actually did sign a goalkeeper in January, but they barely used him, as far as I'm aware. But yes, it's the attacking areas, which is scary. You didn't even mention Ozan Tufan, kind of an attacking midfielder who has also played as a striker at times. Kind of, I wouldn't even say a false nine. He genuinely has been playing as a striker. He's one of their top scorers this season. But it's the three behind the striker. They're about as good as anyone in this division, really. You've got Zaruri, as I mentioned, on loan from Burnley. You've got Carvalho on loan from Liverpool, and many people will know him. He absolutely ate this league last time he was in it when he was playing for Fulham as a literal teenager at the time. He's maybe not had the most development he would have liked over the last sort of 18 months, but he is still a really, really good, talented footballer. Another one that we were kind of linked to a little bit as well. And then Philogene is one of the best wingers in the division, absolutely, no doubts about it. Although that Rabona goal was not a goal for him, it was an own goal, and it's an absolute joke. And I just wanted to get that out there into the world, because if you haven't seen it, it's definitely an own goal. And if you have seen it and you think it's his goal, you're wrong. but yeah, one of the big things for me, and it kind of touches into tactics side of it as well, is the amount of players they've got, though, that are kind of more left side heavy. I'm not saying they didn't have a good January window, we both agree that they definitely did. But they've just got so many players that prefer the left channel and the left half spaces. So you've got either, if you look at Giles, he definitely is he's basically a left wing back playing left back. He's a very attack-minded footballer. He's not the best defensively. You wanted to talk about some weaknesses. He's definitely not, maybe lacks some sort of physical attributes. He definitely could be bullied down that side by a really pacey winger. But he will hug the touchline and dominate that flank, which is great if you've got a player that will cut in. The thing is, they have three of them that are basically best for that sort of left-sided forward role, in Zaruri, Carvalho and Philogene. They've had Philogene there at the start of the season, and now they've had to move him to the right. Again, he's quite two-footed, so it doesn't really matter too much, but he certainly does prefer the left. And then you've got Zaruri's the same. Carvalho can play as a sort of striker or attacking midfielder if you want him to, but his best position probably in the sort of left area of the pitch, driving into the box or driving into sort of the edge of the box to get shots away. Now, they do have a lot of really clean ball strikers, and you touched on that earlier in the pod when you were talking about some of their overperformance on expected goals. I think there's an actual reason for it. They really do have some good players around the edge of the area that can strike through the ball really cleanly. And if you've seen any of their recent goals, there's been a few like that that have certainly happened. But I do think that the actual sort of profiling of players that they did in January is a little bit off, maybe, than they probably should have looked for more right-sided forward. Because one of the big pluses for us is that Liam Delap, who started the season a lot for them and was playing more of a right-sided forward role, even though he's more of a striker, more of a centre forward, he was doing a lot of damage there at carrying the ball into spaces. And I'm not saying there are other wide players can't do that, but they didn't really get an analogue, a direct one for him and replace him. So they've had to sort of rejig things a little bit. And I don't necessarily agree with the way they did it, even though they've got absolutely loads of quality. But I guess what I'm trying to get at here is that's why I'm still scared of them in transition, because even though it's not maybe the right profiles in the right places, they've just got so much pace and threat on the counter in whatever sort of lineup that they put out, that these players can just kind of interchange and just be running at speed at a back line. And I know that our rest defence and our backwards defending has been pretty decent this season at times when we've had to do it, but this is a different proposition. This is definitely one of the scarier front lines in the league. So we need to be very, very careful and very wary of the amount of threats that they have in that regard. I think that covers most of the players. I also just wanted to give one more shout out, which is to Jacob Greaves. Again, he is one of the best centre-backs in the division, and he's been linked with plenty of Premier League clubs at the moment. So if Hull don't go up, he's probably going to be moving on. I think he's captained them quite a bit when Coyle's not been there as well, and he's a local lad. He's another Dan James. I think he's from that exact sort of part of Hull, just outside of Hull. A really, really good defender, left-footed, one of the better English centre-backs. I think he's about 23 years old, so one to keep an eye on, I think, if you're a fan of the Championship. But I think that has covered most of the players and sort of weaknesses. There's the only player we haven't mentioned is Jones, his partner, who's been pretty decent this season, but just maybe not quite at his level. But anyway, I've talked a lot just there, Martin. Can you discuss with me a little bit more about the data and sort of, that side of things, both their attacking and defensive data for me? Go.
Of course, yeah. So first of all, the open play expected goals, they come in around 12th in the league with 33.2 expected goals. But they've had quite a big overperformance from that. They've scored 41 goals from that 33 XG, so that's an 8-goal overperformance nearly.
Ball strikers. That's coming,
yeah, like you've already mentioned, they've got a lot of good ball strikers in there, and quite a few of their players are running ahead of their XG. Looking at some of the numbers here, I think the biggest overperformer is Liam Billap or Ozan Tufan. Ozan Tufan scored 8 goals from just over 5 XG, so overperformance of 3. Bailap has scored 7 from 5.5, so 1.5 overperformance. Philogene has scored 8 from 6.1, so 2 overperformance. And then Aaron Connolly has scored 8 from 6.6. So we've got a lot of players who can overperform their XG and score from distance. So that's definitely something we should keep an eye on when he's be closing down any shots they're taking from distance. Obviously, we've got a pretty competent shot stopper at the moment in Melier. He's been in good form at the moment, and he is generally quite reliable when it comes to distance shots, but we don't want to say too much. So try to get those shots blocked where we can, Lance Atwood's do me a world of good for my hat. And then when it comes to set play XG, that's a bit lower over in the scale, so they're 20th for set play XG, so not really much focus on creating from set plays. It's more about the open play stuff. And they've scored 9 goals from just over 8 XG from set plays. So it's pretty average, really, for that would be. And then the open play XG against, so what they're conceding, they are 7th best in the league for that. So they've allowed 28.94 XG against them, and they've conceded 38 goals from that 28.9 XG. So that's a good 9 goals overperformance from their opponents. So that could explain why they're maybe a bit lower in what the lead than that should maybe say. So if they had maybe a strong goalkeeper between six, they could well have turned some draws into wins and some losses into draws potentially. So that's something to keep an eye on. And then the final thing to mention is the set play XG against, which is 16th in the league, so relatively high. 9.2 XG allowed with only 6 goals conceded. That's quite an interesting quirk that they've underperformed from open play, but overperformed from set plays. So that's quite interesting. I would guess it's technically due to the centre-backs being good at putting the players off when they're going for the headers, and it's good at generally stopping them from getting good, clean headers onto the ball. So that could be a reason for that. And I did say finally for the last one, this is my final point now on their PPDA. So that passes per defensive action. It's quite high, actually, higher than what I was expecting. In case you're not aware what PPDA is, generally the lower the number, which means you allow less passes per defensive action. So theirs is the 17th in the league, 14.3 passes allowed per defensive action. But interestingly enough, with those numbers, a bit of a quirk here. So they've got the 17th highest for PPDA, however, the 5th highest for shot-ending high turnovers. So although in a lot of games they haven't been that effective with their press, they're still creating a lot of high shot-ending turnovers. So that's something we need to keep an eye on. And they also only have one less goal ending high turnovers. So we've scored 8 goals from high turnovers, and they've scored 7 goals from high turnovers. So they are definitely capable of putting pressure on and snicking the ball and scoring from them in those moments. So a bit weird numbers from them. So I guess they can quite drastically change from game to game, and that's something which you mentioned about against the better teams in the league, them dropping that a little bit deeper. So I'm guessing a lot of those high turnovers maybe come off other teams in the league, maybe.
Yeah, and I think that ties in again with a lot of the stuff about individual quality that they've got. They create the high turnover and actually they make something of it rather than the ball breaking down. A lot of players probably able to move off the ball quickly when it's won back and create just pure chaos. They can be quite vibesy in that regard. The numbers are really interesting that basically overperforming XG and underperforming XG by a similar amount. And you'd like to think that might level out. Obviously, football doesn't quite work like that, but it's just an interesting quirk, as you mentioned. Definitely is down to quite a lot of the individual quality they have in terms of ball striking. We've mentioned this on a pod recently. I don't know if anyone heard one of our last ones. We were talking about ball strikers in our squad. We just don't have a huge amount of players that are really, really good in that regard. And Hull have an abundance of them, even from the deeper areas. When you talk about Seri as well, I didn't even mention him and his ability and sort of the level he's played at in his career and stuff. They've just got an abundance in that regard. But yes, as you mentioned earlier in the pod, they've largely set up in either a 4-2-3-1 or 4-4-2. I think recently it's been much more of a 4-2-3-1. So do you want to just quickly tell us what the likely lineup is for me?
So the last lineup against Leicester, they had Alston in goal, Coyle at right back, Jones and Reeves at centre back, Giles at left back, midfield of Slater and Seri, but I think it could well be Morton rather than Slater. Then the attacking lineup was Philogene, Omer, but that could easily be Tufan instead, and Sereri. And then they had Cavalier up front. So a lot of that forward line can be interchangeable, like you already mentioned, about them having lots of left-sided players, so that can just move around a lot. Cavalier, obviously, is more suited to a little bit deeper than being a striker, so he'll definitely play more like a false nine if he's playing up front. So there'll be a lot of players changing positions in that forward line. And maybe it's one thing to mention, it's quite weird that they've got so many left-side attackers, but that's also a weird quirk that we have in our squad as well, having lots of players who prefer the left side. So yeah, that's the thing I wanted to mention on that.
I think we've got less than them, but yeah, we definitely do. Tufan as well, just to quickly mention on him, I said earlier in the pod, he's been used as an attacking midfielder and a striker this season, and it doesn't really matter which role he plays, he kind of drifts about and does his thing and will play on the last line at times and try to get goals in the box, and sometimes he'll be around the edge. Again, another decent ball striker himself. But I think that wraps up the first half of the podcast, so I will just quickly go for an ad break now before we move on to the lead side of the analysis. But first, and I must talk about Patreon. Don't worry, patrons, you don't have to hear this bit. Patreon is a media platform where you can support content creators that you enjoy and you receive extra content in return. Our patrons can get access for as little as $1.99 per month, which gives you ad-free podcasts. And if you want to pay a little more, you get other benefits, including early access to our preview pods, such as the one you're listening to right now, analysis articles, videos, and bonus podcasts, such as one we did recently, which I think you can still listen to even if we have already played Watford. We don't know the result of Watford, and you'll know why later. We'll talk about that soon. But we did a little pod discussing the run-in, and Paul in our Discord, if any Discord members are listening, they should go and head out on and look at what he's done as well, because basically we've kind of predicted what's going to happen for most teams, breaking a few all-stats rules, and it was really, really fun, wasn't it, Martin? Me and you again.
Yes, me and you again, and it was very fun. We basically brought down all the remaining fixtures for all of the four sides, us included, who were looking for those automatic promotion spots. We did some predictions, which is a naughty word in the All-Stats That We podcast. So, yeah, I'm sorry, John. I'm sorry, Darren. We've broken your rules. Hope you forgive us.
Yeah, but it was worth it because it made me feel a little bit better about everyone around us and ourselves as well. So we won't spoil that, but please do go and listen. And if you aren't signed up to the podcast, they can sign up to three different tiers in total. What are they, Martin?
There's the first tier, which is the Barada tier for $1.99, which basically is some way to support us in a little way, which gives you ad-free podcasts. And the middle tier is the Click tier, which is $3.99, comes with ad-free podcasts and early access to preview pods like this one. And then the best tier is a Pablo tier, of course, for $4.99, which includes all the previous benefits, ad-free podcasts, early access to preview pods, and then any other content that we do, such as bonus pods, videos, analysis articles, and just let you know you get everything that we've done for the season as well. It's not just like everything going forward. When you sign up, you get everything that we've done for the whole season, so you can go back and look at the articles we've done on all our new signings. You can go back at looking at the articles we've done on players in individual over the season, like we did one on Archie Gray. So there's lots of stuff on there for you to look back on to keep you with lots of content if you want it.
Yep, and if any of that sounds like it's for you, or if you wanted to hear our very recent running podcast or anything like that, you can sign up at patreon.com/ASAW Patreon.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But now we'll get on into the Leeds analysis side of the podcast. Right, Martin, this is the bit where I reveal something to our listeners in case they were even slightly confused why we haven't even mentioned Watford. Just due to scheduling and timing issues, this part of the podcast, it's all being recorded before we've even played Watford and before we played Hull. So this is the bit that might be a bit iffy because things might change quite drastically over the course of the next few days, and whether we play Watford and there's more injuries or whatever, or players coming back. We don't actually know timescales for everyone. But we did get a little bit of information today because we had the presser, didn't we? So you were really upset about Routier on the last pod that we discussed, where we did discuss Watford a little bit. But it actually is quite good news for him, isn't it?
Yeah, so he's potentially going to be available for the Watford game. Great news. I still don't think he'll start, but good that he's at least going to be available for the bench. So that's very good that as well, that he should be able to play for the whole game, which is a game where I would prefer to have him available, because I don't want to rush him back after Livonia. Let him have that bit of a break, and then he can come back in fresh for the whole game. So that's what I would hope we do. Maybe he can play a little bit towards the end if we need him against Watford. If we're struggling to break them down and we need that little bit extra, then bring him on for the last half an hour or something like that. But I wouldn't want us to risk him too much, really. And the rest of the presser. Sorry, you wanted to say something there about Rota?
Yeah, I just wanted to say he was also absolutely sensational in the reverse fixture, wasn't it? It was probably one of his best performances. So I would really, really like him to be involved in some capacity if we need him. But hopefully we don't need him and we are fine. But yeah, as you were about to go into there, a little bit concerning in regard to other stuff and injuries. So again, do you want to just quickly discuss some of the things that Farkas said for any listeners that haven't heard yet? I'm sure they have.
So yeah, so first of all, the biggest blurb was that Pascal Strouk is definitely going to be out for the rest of the season. Yeah, I feel you on that one. It's so sad. I really wanted him to play some part in the running, and he deserves it. He was so good at the start of the season, like so good. But best centre back in the league, and he was very playable in the part of the season. And it's a shame that he's not going to be back. But we'll have to do the best that we can without him. And then the rest is Stuart Dallas won't be back.
But he did talk about it. He did talk about it, didn't he? The day before, talked about the fact that he would like to play for us again. He would like to earn a new contract, and that's what he's focusing on. And he did say, basically, that he wants to play for Northern Ireland again as well at some point in his career. But he knows it's going to be difficult because he has been out for so long. I'm going to be honest, it's awful. It's sad, but there's a very, very, very high chance that Stuart Dallas doesn't play for us again. I know that quite a lot of people listening maybe hope that we've got promotion sewn up by the final day so that he can even just come on for 5-10 minutes, but I don't know how likely any of that is, really. So it's a shame, but it is what it is. I don't think we'll need to discuss Stuart Dallas many more times this season, but yeah, we can just say that. But yeah, go through the other stuff for me. Strouk is obviously a huge blow for me personally, and a bit of a mess up from the club in the end. Not that they've done that all that much this season, but there have been a few occasions, this is definitely one of them, where he was brought back and he seemed to be fine, and then he's done another injury, and then they thought, oh, he can just have some injections to get him through. It's not going to be the case. It's good that he's had now surgery and he's going to be out until pre-season, which is a shame. But yeah, he is not the biggest issue in this game because we knew he probably wouldn't make it. The other ones are some new ones that have come out, and Do you really like the international breaks? Because I don't.
No, not for this sort of thing. So during this international break, obviously, Firpo probably won't be available for the Watford game, but I would expect he'll be available for the whole game, so that's fine. But then there's also Ilya Groove, who is picked up a knock and is a doubt for the Watford game. And the same goes for Nonto, and the same goes for Connor Roberts. So that's just great. Is that perfect news? But this is there were doubts for the Watford game, but he didn't say that they were definitely out. So that's the little silver lining that I'm clinging on to there, that it should be fine for the whole game if they aren't available for the Watford game. So it should just be the one game that they miss, hopefully, or if at least even a couple of them are available. If, say, Groove and Nonto were available, that would help us out a lot. So then we would have Firpo at left back, and we'd have Ray at right back, and we'd have a nice settled midfield of Groove and Mara. So as long as at least a couple of those players are back, I won't be too concerned. However, if they're not, then it could prove to be a bit of an issue for us.
Yeah, it's just going to be pure guesswork on our behalf, and it also means that the Watford podcast that we put out is a little bit dated because we basically said a load of players there we were expecting to start who may not even be involved in the squad at all for the Watford game, and we don't know whether they'll be back in time for Hull, which is a short turnaround. I'm going to go off the idea that the only one of these that's definitely going to be available for Hull is Firpo. He might even make the bench against Watford yet. The listeners will know if he did or not. But the other ones, I'm not sure. Hopefully we're all wrong, and Nonto and Gurev were involved against Watford and can be against Hull, Roberts as well. But we just don't know. But anyway, we'll talk about predicted lineup in a minute. It's going to be an absolute mess. But I'll first ask you our classics, and the first of which is, how will we approach the game in possession?
So it will be our usual method of possession. We'll look to dominate the ball. We'll look to attack quickly when all these gaps are to attack. We'll mix things up. We'll always stick with the short pass. We will look to try to get passes in beyond if they are at a high line. We'll look to get balls through to Bamford, running through beyond, and to any wingers who are making similar runs. So it will just be the standard Leeds United under Daniel Farke that we know and love from this season. And I can't see that being anything different.
Nope, especially because we're at home. And although I think they have a lot of threats that we need to be wary of, I still think we're going to try and play our game, pin them as much as possible, and just knock the ball around and look for openings, as we tend to do. And hopefully Routier is one player that is back, because he would be very, very key in this game. How do you expect us to approach this game out of possession? I guess this is maybe a slightly more nuanced question than the first, because we know what we're going to do in possession. But I do think there's a little bit more to be wary of this time, isn't there?
Yeah, because Hull are a bit of a different side to the games that we've had recently. They're a team who are able to play through a press. They've got good ball-playing defenders. They've got midfielders who are press-resistant. So they are definitely capable of evading and playing through a high press. So it's an interesting one. I don't think that we would ever sit back at home and not attempt a high press. I just don't think that would be allowed unless we was up against a top Premier League side, and that's what we'd do then. But in a game against a local rival in Hull, we will not be sitting back and being passive. So we will still be aggressive, and we will still be looking to force mistakes. Although I do think they are good on the ball. I do think that with the right press, they can be got at. They'd see sometimes in the game against Sunderland, where Sunderland did have some joy in getting some high turnovers against them. So I don't think that they are invulnerable to a press. And on our day, our press is the best in the league. So I do definitely think that we can cause any team problems in this league, especially if we apply some kind of hybrid press that we've used at times this season. If we're putting pressure on right players who are dropping deep, if we're making sure to keep track of players like Valio, who's like to drop deep and they aid in build-up, and then get forward himself. So there's lots of players who have to do that, and we need to be aware of that and putting pressure on having players stick aggressively to their men and in the forward areas, and then getting back nice and compact into areas when they do have the ball. So it's important that both our high press is good and also our box defending is equally good, because it's going to be a threat at both ends of the pitch in their build-up good, and so will their approaching the final third. We need to quickly enact getting the through balls through to our forward players when we do win the ball back. So yeah, it's definitely going to be the same sort of leads, but we need to be on point in this game to stop them from their way.
I don't think I could have answered that better myself. Yeah, definitely rest defence is going to be a really key thing for both teams. at dealing with those transition attackers and things like that. But yeah, you're pretty spot on there. I wanted to speak about one more thing in possession, because I think out of possession you've nailed it there, and I don't really need to add much. But yeah, those sort of spaces they're going to leave if they do at any point decide to aggressively press us. I think going maybe a little bit more direct, which we have seen at times, we definitely don't mind those clipped balls. Ampadu's really good at them, and he'll obviously be involved. Looking for those moments when to drop the ball into certain pockets, I think that's going to be really, really key. Getting Somerville on the ball a lot, I think that's also going to be really key. And that brings me on quite nicely to players now, because you mentioned both in and out possession stuff there. One of the players who I think is going to be really, really key to the outcome of this game, who should be fit and fresh and back, is your favourite man himself, Jorginho Rutter. In terms of out possession, he's just going to have far more intensity than Joel Perreault. Obviously, Perreault's very, very likely to start against Watford as it stands. If he didn't, I'm sorry to anyone listening, we don't know. But yeah, it's very likely that he does. But against Hull, I wouldn't, even if he gets two or three goals, I wouldn't expect Perreault to stay in the team necessarily. I think Rutter would come straight back in, because he is so much better, both in and out of position, creatively so important for us, but also, yeah, just more mobility, more athleticism, more intensity in general. And I think that's more important in a game like this, and being very, very wary of Hull's threats and being able to enact that, as you mentioned. And he's one I wanted to give a real big nod to, and I know I've stolen him from you because he's your boy, but do you want to talk to me about some of the other players that in a positive respect are going to be really key to the outcome of this game for Leeds United?
So yeah, to mention some players who be very good for this in this game, as I think this could be a very good game for Dan James, if Nonto isn't available, which it does look like could be the case, if he maybe could be on the bench, and on how involved he is against Watford. But if Daniel James is to play, then it could be a good game, which would suit him very well, because obviously his biggest strength is his pace, and that is something which Hull's backline do possess, really. So he would be able to make a lot of fun in getting behind their left side, because Giles does get forward. So if he does get forward in the space there, he'll be able to attack that in abandon. So he's one who I would straight away look to. And then there's also Patrick Bamford, because they are good box defenders. And both their centre-backs, Greaves and Jones, are box defending, and we're going to need Mumford to be pulling them around, making space for other players to get into. And that's going to be very important in this game, like always, because he knits together so many things for us, as Patrick Bamford, even now at the age he is. So I'm hoping for a good game from him. So those are the two which I would pick out.
Yeah, lovely. Yeah, definitely true that wingers for us and for them are going to be key. Wingers for us in particular, in the sense of if we do have a transitional moment and they do, at least one of the fullbacks, they put them forward and get into aggressive areas in attack, they're going to leave a lot of space down those flanks behind them. And if we can isolate either the fullback on the other side or even an outside centre-back when they create that situational back three, which we expect them to, then that's going to be really key, whoever's playing. And obviously Dan James is a whole boy, so hopefully he has a point to prove, and he certainly does after what he did for Wales recently. Sorry, any Welsh listeners, really, really sorry. I am English and I don't give a shit about you. Why did I say that? in terms of sort of other players for us, the players I'm probably most concerned about, fullbacks, whoever we start there. Reason being, they really do have unbelievable quality on the flanks. I think that's probably the area of the team they're really strong. So Firpo and to be honest, anyone, Gray, Firpo, Byram, Roberts, whatever combination we end up playing, I'm pretty concerned by what Phil G and Zaruri will do, and also the ability for them to double up with Giles potentially tacking down a side, or Carvalho, you know, freeing himself up and just deciding to drift wide or whatever it might be. I think they've got a lot of threats that can really cause us some damage down those sides, in transition or in set-up play, really. I think they're going to be pretty strong in that regard. So that's where I'm probably most concerned. And then, yeah, just winning the midfield battle and the duels in there, I think we'll be pretty good at that. I think we have been, especially in home games more than others. It's hardly ever that we've lost loads of control. We obviously did against Stoke not that long ago in the start of the second half for a little bit, but it doesn't happen that often, and I don't imagine that'll be too much of a problem here. But it's just, again, something to be kind of wary of in those midfield areas, because they do have some good ball players, and if they can start to play or they can start to hit quite direct balls into channels or to wingers, then it's going to be a long day for us, a long evening for us. But yes, Shall we have a stab at predicted lineup? It is really, this is probably going to be the worst we've ever done this season at predicting this to be correct. I can't imagine we got this right, because I think at least one or two players are probably going to be back fit for it. But go ahead, Martin, have a go.
So I'm going to go with Melier in goal. He's always great right back. And it's going to be the usual backs two in centre-back areas in Rodden and Ampadu at left-back. Will most likely be Firpo. He should be fine for this game. Midfield. I'm going to say that Groove will be available. So I'm going to go with Groove and Camara there. But I'm going to say maybe Nonto this is out, or maybe that he decides to go with James instead. So then you'll have James and Routere and Somerville. And then up front, it'll be Bamford.
Yeah, I totally agree. Except for one, which is the right winger, I think. If Nonto is even slightly doubtful, Dan James didn't play two full internationals over the break. Nonto played almost two full internationals for the under-21s team. I think it's more likely that James starts against Watford and Nonto starts against Hull if he's back fit. But otherwise, I think you're pretty much spot on there. I can't really disagree. Obviously, there's really small chances of, like, if Byramin presses against Watford, he might stay in the team in some capacity, but he might even be right back and Gray might move to midfield and we rotate a little bit there if we have to, especially if Gruev's not 100%. But again, this is pure guesswork for us. I think the one we're hoping for most and one that we're feeling the most confident about is Ruta, and hopefully he is in some capacity starting. yes, let's kind of wrap up here. Final two questions. First of which is, what do you expect watching this game of football will look like?
So we will definitely, I think, dominate ball, not overly dominant. So I'd expect maybe high 50% possession. So we will have most of the ball, but Hull will still have spells where they will possess the ball and try to clamp down angry at times. So we'll have to sometimes sit off and absorb some pressure. So that's going to be crucial that we do absorb that well and to hit them in transition in those moments quickly. I think there could well be an opening goal, and it could get quite chaotic if that does happen, if an early goal does happen. Both teams will be leaving more space then. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see who does get the first goal, and that could set the tone for the rest of the game. I think I don't want to step too much on the toes of the next question. But yeah.
Well, I don't really have too much to add. I think I agree on what you said there. So I will skip straight over to the next question and step on your toes very much so and talk about the first goal, which we've discussed so much on this podcast this season. But I think it's even more sort of important here in this game. And the reason for that is, I think if we score first, the game's really going to open up and be quite fun. I could see there being quite a few goals in that regard, because I do think we'll still continue to attack ourselves. I don't think we'll suddenly think, we've scored, we might as well sort of game manage this and sort of look to sort of slow the game down. I still think we'll try to attack as much as possible, potentially more in transition, and that could be really, really good for us, but also for them if we start doing that as well. Whereas if they score first, that's when I think the game could be just absolutely horrible here. They basically scored really early against Southampton in that game at St Mary's not that long ago, sort of couple of months back or whatever. They scored early in that, and then they scored again, and then they were really able to see it out because they just had so many moments of being able to just transition on Southampton that Southampton were really struggling to even get forward that often, because they were, when they would try, Hull would just break and win the ball back, break and just constantly just have a go at them in that sense. And I think that's what could happen here. We obviously haven't lost a home game this season, and I'm not trying to jinx anything at all, Martin, but I do think if they score, it could be, you know, if they score first, it actually could be one of the games we struggle most to get back in. And our powers of recovery have been good this season. But this is not one of those games where I'd feel super, super confident about it. And yeah, that's why I'm a little bit more concerned by them than most people probably are, even though I do back us in home games and I think we're really strong. And I still think there's every chance we could win this. I think a lot does hinge on whoever gets that first goal. I wouldn't do a proper prediction, but I think if we score first, there'll probably be like four or more goals. Whereas if they score first, it might actually only be like one or two goals in the entire game, because they'll look to just frustrate and then transition on us as much as possible. But yes, where do you think the game will be won or lost?
Struggled to add much more to what you said there, really. I agree entirely. You've nailed it. So yeah, the first goal is crucial. They are definitely capable of defending their box well if they do score early, and that would make things very difficult for us. Although we have been very good at coming back when teams do score first. Quite a lot of times we've responded within 5 minutes of the goal being scored, so that immediately takes the advantage away. So I don't think it's the end of the world if we do concede first. It will definitely make our lives more difficult. So I would ideally like to score first, and that would settle me down a lot. ideally in the first 15, 20 minutes would be nice. But yeah, that's going to be a big part of where this game will win or lost. And additionally on that, the wingers will always play a big part for both teams in this game. So whichever wingers have the most joy against fullbacks will also have fun in the game and do well.
And yeah, this really is a feast of good championship wingers. There are sort of, even including Dan James, and this, the five that I'm thinking of are sort of five of probably the best 10 in the entire division, I would say, if I was to rank them all. So really, really, really strong in that regard for both teams. Yeah, I agree with you. Lovely. Well, just a quick reminder, the website for our Patreon is, Martin, what is it?
Patreon.com/ASAW Patreon.
And we'll be back with a double review of both this game and Watford. And then we will be with you shortly to preview the games after that. And I can't even remember. That's how fried my brain is this week after Watford and Hull talk. But yes, all that's left for me to say is thank you to Martin.
Thank you as well, Adam.
And thank you to the dear listeners. I hope you're all enjoying your Easter weekend. Goodbye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.